Listen to the PA Rut Report, Pennsylvania's premier podcast station, PA Rut.
All right, all right, all right. You are here with PA Rut Report's Hunting, Fishing, and Outdoors. We have a good episode coming at you. And we have Dr. Bill, Brother Roy, as our special guest. PA Rut Rob is here, of course, along with yours truly, PA Rut Brad. We have a lot to talk about in a short amount of time. So we'll see what we can get at you guys. But I think first and foremost, we want to say hello to and a thank you to Dr. Bill and Brother Roy for joining us today. How you guys doing today?
Welcome, fellas.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I'm glad to be here.
Well, we were gonna lead in with the annual hibernation period that we go through over the wintertime, and why you don't hear anything from us during these cold months in Pennsylvania, we're like bears.
Lots of soccer, lots of Cub Scouts.
Lots of flu bugs, lots of, you know, that kind of fun
stuff. Don't forget work.
Work. Yeah, work never stops. But, yeah. So, yeah.
When you kind of slack off on work towards the end of hunting season,
yeah.
Then you got to pick up and actually let your employers know why you're supposed to be there during the off season. So, yeah, you work a little bit more.
Work.
But anyway, we're getting into it here. This is, beginning of spring. A lot of things are happening. Stuff is starting to bloom.
Yeah, turkey, the woods is getting green.
Turkey season's coming in. Yeah. Trout season's coming in. A lot of stuff we're used to do out there in Pennsylvania, all over the state and beyond. But, you know, mostly we're Pennsylvania here. So there's a youth trout day coming up here, which we're going to get into on the 15th.
The 8th.
And then the opening day is on the 15th.
That's statewide. There was a regional mentored youth day, and I don't even know what region of Pennsylvania it was in, but it was on the 25th of March. I've seen a lot of pictures from the PA Fish and Forestry page of youngsters holding up giant trout. So,
and you can also get the stalking schedules for these youngsters to get into the field and actually be successful out there. It's good to key into the stocking schedules, especially for these young kids.
4.2 million trout being set free in the waters of Pennsylvania.
So now, do they restock after the youth day, or do they just stock it and then?
Yeah, they stock throughout the year.
I know they stock throughout the year, but they restock for the first day after the youth day, or no?
I would assume so.
Yeah. Certain places they probably do,
like the highly populated areas.
Yeah.
It's going to be fun for the youth to get out there on the 8th. Freshly stocked streams and hopefully beautiful weather. We've had some nice weather so far.
So
it's a good idea to do that for the kids.
Oh, yeah.
Pennsylvania is, that's one thing that Pennsylvania does focus on with the mentored youth programs all through the sportsmen's seasons. They do a very good job at getting the youth out there before the actual adult can get out there in the woods and do what they do. Sometimes it's a little bit better.
I wish I did that when I was a youth.
Sometimes it's a little bit better for the youth to get out there before the turkeys are getting used to people calling at them and a bunch of stuff, people tromping through the woods and the trout streams, and there's not a 1,000 people out there in one stream. There's only
turkey hunters don't like us mushroom hunters either.
No, you guys screw some stuff
up. No, you definitely screw some stuff up. That's for sure. But, you know, typically I'm on private ground when I hunt, so you mushroom hunters should steer clear.
Steer clear. We foraying into the foraging side of things right now.
What's that?
Foraying into the foraging. With the mention of mushrooms, or do we want to talk a little bit more about?
No, we can get into anything you want to talk about. I mean, you know, it all has to do with... It all has to do with, it's all relative, you know.
It's spring. It's time to be outside.
You can hunt turkey in the morning and fish in the afternoon. You can go ahead and take care of your shotgun on your back with a sling and fish a stream. And if you hear a gobbler sound off, you can go hunt that gobbler. It's a great time of year.
You might walk over the ridge and find some mushrooms.
It's a great time. Yeah, and you might walk over the ridge and find some ramps and mushrooms or garlic.
We got to come up with some kind of term like the triple trophy. You got to have something for the spring. Like pick a dozen morels, shoot it. Turkey, shoot a gobbler.
Catch a trout.
Catch a native trout.
Now you're talking.
Make a good meal.
That would make a delicious meal.
That could be something. That could be. You're onto something there, I think, Pierre.
Might be. Right, but so, yeah, we did the Jaffa Shrine Sports Show. When was that? 3 weeks ago?
About 3 weeks ago.
Always nice to get out and see. It's kind of our local show.
It was fun.
Always nice to get out and see everybody, like-minded folks, passionate folks. But what I bring that up for is Brother Roy here and Dr. Bill came and helped us man the booth during the show. And at the booth, there's pictures set out of myriad of things that Brother Roy has come across in his outdoor action over the years. And everybody there, well, not everybody, but the majority of people that stopped at the booth stopped because of the pictures of the morel mushrooms sitting out.
Yeah, people were in
a lot of people.
Morels, asparagus, and ramps. And
yep.
Asking me, where do you find these ramps in Pennsylvania? I'm like, oh my, yeah.
Back here in the woods.
Everywhere in Pennsylvania. You just
gotta
find them.
You don't just get your pictures on the internet and print them out and say, I found these.
They're out there. You just gotta get out and look. And the mushrooms, they're gonna be coming within a couple weeks.
A couple weeks, you think so?
I'd say by April 15th, April 20th, they'll start.
Right.
For about 3 weeks to a month, as long as we get moisture. And
there you have it, boys and girls. Drop your fishing rods at noon.
Yeah,
on
yeah.
the 15th, you go looking for morels. And if you're in Brother Roy's area, he'll have all the mushrooms picked up.
Yeah, they'll already be gone. Don't
before
follow.
You put your fishing rod down at noon, so don't worry about
what
that.
What they always say, don't follow Brother Roy's truck in springtime.
No, it's bad news.
Levels disappear.
Most of the time, I don't take my truck.
Incognito.
Rental
cars. But if you were a novice or a beginner mushroom hunter, Brother Roy, what is it that these folks should be looking for when they're looking for any of the species out there, but primarily the morels?
The biggest thing with mushroom hunting is learning your trees. I hunt mainly elm trees, but ash trees and poplar trees are good also. Mainly elms is what I go for, and that's the biggest thing. Learn your trees and put the miles in. You can't just expect to walk out in a half hour, walk a half a mile, and find mushrooms. You know, you go out and put 5-10 miles in a day,
yep,
you'll find bags full of mushrooms.
Well, you hear a lot of people, myself included, I was never really a mushroom eater, a fan of mushrooms growing up, until one day old Booger was cooking up some morels on the grill. This was 15 years ago. He's like, here, try these. I was like, I don't even really like mushrooms. I was hooked ever since. But you get a lot of people walk by, and again, myself included. I've been out in the woods for various reasons all my life, almost 36. And really, I don't think I've ever seen a morel in the woods. Now, I never really went out looking for them, but
I'll have to get you out. Take a walk with me.
Let's say this. I've seen since now I know what I'm looking for, and I've seen since now that I've tasted them and think I want to find these myself. But you get a lot of people that say, what are those? Morel mushrooms.
They're morels, yeah.
I've been in the woods for 55 years. I've never seen one of them. And
there's some of those folks that they find that really knows what they are.
Yeah.
It's real important that you know what a morel mushroom is and not just somebody think that they're eating a morel mushroom.
There are false morels. There are stuff out there you can't eat, but it's just... When you find a morel, you'll pretty much know what it is.
Now, what's the difference between the false morel and a real morel?
A real morel is hollow inside, and a false morel is solid the whole way through.
There you go.
They have to be hollow to be a true morel.
Don't eat them
solid the
ones.
Whole way through.
That is a false morel if they're solid.
Yep.
If they're solid the way
solid
through.
If they're solid through, they're false.
Thought I heard that right. I was just checking to make sure. Now, a lot of you guys that tune into our podcast might be saying, you know, I heard this on a previous podcast, the same kind of conversation, but we have new people tuning in. So it's always good to get that word out there to let people know what they can and can't do for fun in Pennsylvania because basically, like we said, it's a spring.
It's something
stuff's
to do.
Blooming, it's great
to keep up all winter. You can be kept up all winter, and it's getting nice out. And you can go out and watch the plants grow, and you get to see all kinds of stuff when you're out hiking.
Watch the bucks grow, too.
Watch
the bucks grow.
Take a look at what we were talking about at the beginning of the podcast, the mentored youth programs and what the state does for getting youth active and out in the woods.
Youths.
Getting involved in sporting. Going out and hunting for mushrooms and hunting for sheds are two very good activities that you can do with your children just to get them outside. After a long winter, it's good to get the kids out, good to hike, good to get them involved in the outdoors. So it's like a treasure hunt. Really, I mean, if I was a young man again, I'd love to be out in the woods hunting for something that I could munch on.
If you want to know
much older than me, and I spent a lot of time in the woods.
If you want to know what they look like, you can.
No, well, I'm saying
pictures on your Brother Roy page. You got pictures of the ramps and mushrooms.
Oh, yeah, I got lots of pictures of ramps. So if you want to know what they look like, the whole, easy the whole thing. Ramps are up. The ramps are actually up right now, about a half inch. They're already starting.
So since we're talking about, we got into your page there and how you have pictures of, to identify these things on there. Why don't you go ahead and give them your page detail on what you guys are trying to do now with your new business coming out, also with Brother Roy's page and your company that you're coming out, your seed company you're coming out with. Let's get into that. Let's talk a little bit about that since we have about 15 minutes left in the first half. I think it all should be yours. That's what most people tune into. Right. So putting you on the spot. Let's get after it.
Well, we've been everything I do, we do out there. I do a lot of foraging, everything I get, but mainly we do a lot of food plots, small acre food plots, some big, decent sized acreage food plots. And we've been testing seed for 6 years now. Around six, right, Bill?
Somewhere right there.
About 6 years. Yeah. Different seasons for central Pennsylvania here. And we've been coming up with some blends now. And we're thinking about starting our own seed company up. And it's in the works right now. We're very excited about it. I mean, we think it's going to go real well. And we got custom blends for central Pennsylvania.
Yeah, that's the big thing with what you were planning. You know it works here. You have tried it.
We have a lot of seeds we've tried.
You're going to give instructions on how to do so.
They don't work, and we found out what works here well in central Pennsylvania. And we're going to take it to the next level with our own seed blends and try to get it out to everybody else so they can have awesome food plots.
And you're going
to
give the right, the pH soil samples, what it should be. You're not going to do the samples for them, of course. Well, maybe you will at a cost, but you'll give the right pH, what you need in your soil for that, and kind of instruction on where you should be with your soil beforehand for that seed.
There's
specific seed.
There's
I guess
a lot to do with seed bed preparation, which is that's a giant topic of its own. And what we want to try to do, as far as what we want to do first, is we want to try to be at least to be able to launch blends, be they perennials and annuals. The idea pretty much for anybody's, for any food plotter, you want to be roughly 50-50, maybe 60-40 perennials to annuals. And that way you kind of, what we're trying to do is we feed the deer, 12 months out of the year. There's something always green back on our farm, and it's funny how that works. I mean, because they'll walk through an alfalfa field, they'll walk through a clover field, they'll walk through the brassicas to get to something different that day. Sometimes it might even be in the woods. So, deer eat, they say, I think it's roughly 200 different species of food. So deer eat a lot of stuff. And so it's not just our food plot sometimes, but there's a lot to do with, site preparation and what folks want to plant is one of the things that you want to really kind of come up with kind of first, early. We always recommend in clovers, and that's always a good place to start. There's a lot of really hardy clovers that grow really well in Pennsylvania.
And you can manage clover a lot. Real, to be sure.
All right, so you guys, let me swipe right there. So you guys are talking about multiple food plots on your ground. Now, a lot of these guys that are listening will be like, man, well, I don't have that property to do such things. I don't have that much property to do that. Well, I want you to tell them how many acres you have, how many different plots you do on that acreage, and how do you utilize your logging roads, your, just even barriers or cutting stuff out to make it ample for you to do the food plot in that area where you need it so badly. So I know there's a lot. I've been up on your ground.
Oh, it is. We're sitting on roughly 46 acres, which
not a lot of ground.
It's not really a lot of ground. It isn't, and we're surrounded by big timber. We have game lands above us, which people say, "Oh, you're planting all that food right next to the game lands." Well, the deer come to our 46 acres roughly, and we put enough food out that they're all over it.
And
we plant big fields. We have a couple big pre-existing fields that used to be farmland. A 3-acre field, a 1-acre field, maybe a, by what's that one field by the house there? It's 3 acres satellite field.
It's roughly in that range, yeah.
And then we have old logging roads from logging activity, which we got planted all in clover. And
you could get a lot of action out of a relatively small piece. It really doesn't take the acreage that we have. We have a lot of big fields, and we do those fields, and that is nice, but that's not a requirement. And there's a lot of logging roads, and there's a lot of different even trails where folks have property, and they what they do, to be sure. There's a lot of folks that have a lot more property than what they think. It doesn't really take a lot. There's even
a couple acres. That's
some of our blends we have that are it's the throw and grow type things where folks can go in that they can't get machines in, or you can't get maybe just with a four wheeler. And what we try to do is, you know, we're trying to, like everybody else wants to do, we want to try to attract deer, we want to keep them there, and then we want to feed them while they're there, try to make bigger, healthier fawns and bigger, healthier bucks.
Yeah, you got to keep them fawns healthy.
Oh, yeah. Well, just by driving around your property with you guys, you know, I've noticed that a lot of those top ridges where it's almost like the highest point in the property, where you have like kind of select cut to get some trees out of there, to get some sunlight down, to get some growth underneath there. And you plant those logging roads or around that area where you cut those trees down to get that sun in there. So also you're producing on your top hills as well, which is a good thing if you have like
and
a high.
It's very shaded,
property.
Very, very shaded areas with the logging roads. And we do trim them out some. I mean, we cut brush, we trim our edges out. I am a tree climber. I outside trim trees just to let light in on certain areas. And we plant our blend of clover, I ain't saying what it is, but we found it works great in shade. And drought resistant, because it's on the top of a ridge and it's dry soil. And our clover just does phenomenal on these logging roads.
We've had failures. They didn't start out that way. So
everybody will have failures.
A lot of those blends are, it's trial and error, and some things work better in Pennsylvania. We've had some really good setup that really works really well for me. I think you have a lot of pictures of those on your page too.
Oh my, I do. I have a lot on there.
Well, the green, I mean, you just sent pictures out to your page recently, you know, and you're not only talking about food planting in the spring, but you know, you can put some stuff out there that's going to feed these deer up until into the new spring.
Turnips and
you know, you said they're hammering them right now, right?
They are just ridiculous hammering right now. That last snowstorm we had, it looked like in 2 days that the whole field looked like a rototiller went through. And like, you can look at the lower section of the field, it used to be a cornfield. There's not even a track in it. You look at the upper section of the field and it is just tore up. They are just hammering it.
So you're holding deer on your property year long. You're planting food plots that last basically year long.
Oh, all year long, yeah.
So as soon as we start turning the stuff up over here in the next few weeks, I mean, deer hitting your property.
Yeah, our clover stays green. Our clover stays green all winter.
Yeah.
I mean, winter, summer, gets knee deep in the summer. I mean, it's a couple
like you said,
in the
you're setting yourselves up. You might be against the game lanes and you don't have that much property, but you're giving the deer a reason to stay there. You also have water on the property. I saw a pond.
Oh, yeah, we have water, we have
creeks. I'm sure there's natural springs up there and everything. But,
yeah,
it's
just a good chunk of property. Anybody can do it on any piece of any piece of property they have. It's just putting the time into it and a little bit of money.
A lot of effort. There's one of the things that we got to do on our small plots is, they couldn't have done any better at Penn State. It was better than a collared deer, is we had a doe with one horn, about a 6-inch horn. The horny doe, that's what we called her. And she was there for 8 years. We'd see her every year. So she never lost that horn, so she kept that horn.
Nobody in the game has killed her on neighboring property. She stayed on our property.
It would be really difficult to do a test, any kind of there couldn't be any more natural than that she like was there and she never left. So
yeah, there's a reason.
As far as folks saying like you can't manage on a small piece with all this public hunting around you, they really do come and they stay on our property. They hide somewhere, just like deer always do. I mean, just like they appear, they disappear. And they seem to be there. So we've seen that doe out there for 8 years straight, and we know that there are a lot of does that stay other than just her.
Well, guys, you know, you talk about the rut and stuff whenever bucks start to leave your property, or maybe they come onto your property. You might gain as many bucks on your property as they do leave.
A lot of the bucks we see in archery season rut. In the rut.
Yeah.
We've never seen before.
Exactly.
The ones we've had pictures of all summer, we don't see them
when
we're hunting.
Yeah.
They get another property chasing does, and then it's crazy.
But in all the research I saw, Penn State does some great research with bucks and coloring them and tracking them and seeing what's going on with them throughout the year. But it seems like, you know, a lot of the mature bucks will travel, but they'll always come back to their core, to their home area at the end of winter, like towards the end of winter when it's real cold out. They'll get back into their core area to wait for spring to come, and they'll be back there again. So you guys are giving them something to come back to.
Oh, we had our one field there. It was 2 weeks after second season went out, muzzleloader season, last season in PA here. We had 11 different bucks. I've had pictures of 2 weeks after hunting season went out. 11 different bucks in our fields. Some big, big, big bucks. A lot of smaller bucks, young bucks. 8 points, 6 points, couple fours. Everybody has the spike that runs around. But we've had some pretty decent deer, and I mean, we found a few sheds already just in our food plots, and it's holding the deer.
Yeah, I've never been very lucky with shed hunting.
I haven't either, here and there.
I've tried, walked around here and there, and, you know, I don't do it avidly, but I'll go out in the woods one day and I'll say, you know, hike a few miles. And
did you see those bearded buck guys the other day? 47 sheds in the day.
Yeah, there was a lot of guys. Give a shout out to the bearded buck, friends of ours from northern Cambria. Give a shout out to them for their
every year they have a shed hunting get together.
They did good.
Oh yeah, very well. I think they had 28 guys up there coming to property for sheds. Get a chance, check out their page, take a look at the harvest that they got. It's pretty impressive.
We were invited, but we couldn't get up there. Kids kept us here.
Folly kids.
But anyway, we missed a good time, I'm sure.
Oh yeah.
All right, so. Back to thanks for giving the bearded buck a shout out.
Yeah, I just
brother
thought
Roy, there you are, there you are.
Bearded buck shout out.
Check those guys out. Good friends of ours. Good people. They do a lot of food plots as well, and I think that
they
know what they're doing. But I think that brother Roy would love to get up on their property.
I would like to get
see
there.
That. See what a 1,000 acre property can do for you, possibly. You know, but we'll get him up there soon. Hopefully. But anyway, back to you guys and your property and how you manage it, what you do. How many bucks have you passed up this year, this past year? I'm sorry, not 17, 16 archery season, Roy. How many bucks did you pass up just saying, yep,
I don't even know how, I can't even count.
Get going. Get out of here, buck.
I don't know what to say. I see so many, I'm like, oh, man, I'm not shooting that. And then I'm shooting that. Gets there, I'm like, nope, ain't big enough. I keep letting them walk and... Eventually, you'll kill a big one. It's just most of the bucks we pass up, people would say, why did you pass something like that up?
I say that too whenever they're already walking by. What was I thinking?
Why did I let that thing walk?
That's a terrible idea.
We try to manage it. We let them walk. And
I had one this year. The only reason I let it go is because I was after this big 10-point I had on our property. And it came down. I saw the side of it. I saw a side view of them. He came down, he was 30 yards, tracking in there 30 yards, and I had a shooting lane. I'm thinking, okay, you got a shooting lane. I'm looking at his horn. And I'm like, okay, pretty decent buck, but not as big as his 10-point. So I was like, I put my bow back on the hanger, and I just sat there with binoculars, and I watched him. And I'm watching him side view. Whenever he started to walk directly away from me, that's when I realized how big he was. And I probably should not have let that buck go.
They get
go.
A little bigger shame. Sometimes walking.
Probably
away.
Should not have shame. Let that buck go. That's but, true. You know, I was after a bigger buck, and that was on my head, on my mind, which I probably, you know, I kicked myself in the butt for, so my neighbor ended up killing that buck. But
Brad's a trophy hunter now.
No, I'm not a trophy hunter. It's just, it was like one of those things that I just saw that buck, and I just said, you know what, there's
season.
Bigger ones up here. I have some time left, and I can do it. So.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Well, it says when you have the time to put in, everybody's a trophy hunter. If you have the land and the property that you're used to hunting, everybody's a trophy hunter. Myself included, I've passed up probably 2 or 3 bucks a year waiting for that one that you see. If you're out there putting if you're out there putting in a decent amount of time, which I spend probably 2 months before the season out in the fields looking at getting the binoculars out, scoping, just watching the way they're traveling, where they're coming out in the fields. Every year I see 4 or 5 bucks and I'm like, okay, if he comes by, he's getting one. And then every year
you let them walk by.
Every year you see 3 or 4 little ones, letting them walk by, and then the season ends, and I'm like, meat in the freezer. Yeah,
sometimes I'm good with
that. That's what you want to do, though. You're hunting a trophy. Yeah. And
sometimes I go out, and I'm like, I'm killing a deer today, no matter what. First big deer that walks up, she's dying. And then that first big deer that walks up, I let her go.
I do that lots, too.
Trophies are in the eye of the beholder.
That is very true. That's true.
That's an individual thing, and that's what we do because, you know, we've harvested some deer and maybe we're waiting out for like a bigger deer, but trophy bucks, everybody has a different standard. And
oh, yeah.
My standard changes a lot when rifle season comes out.
That's true, too.
If I killed one in archery, then the standard changes a little more in rifle.
Well, I can say this.
I do like to put meat in the freezer.
Yeah, Dr. Bill brings up a good point. Trophies in the eye of the beholder. And I can say I've shot a decent amount of big bucks in my day, but probably my favorite hunt of all time, I shot a 4-point, and it stands out to me primarily because it was the first time I hunted on my own. So I think I was probably 15, and I had hiked up on the hill behind our house and shot a 4-point, and I remember calling the old man saying I got one, and that was kind of, for me, that was probably the most memorable. And if you're talking about trophy hunting, like I said, I've shot a lot of big bucks, but really none of them compared to that 4-point that I shot the first time I was out by myself. So it's just very circumstantial, and again, it's all about being out there, really.
True. And a whitetail with an arrow, a whitetail with a stick and a string is an impressive get right there. So
that
it takes
it
a stealth hunter, and you have to put minutes in, and you know, everybody does get lucky once in a while, but that's one of those kind of things. I don't encourage trophy hunting. I mean, hunting is hunting. You got to get them in the woods, and there's a...
Yeah, you got to trick them. I don't care how... I mean, you could have a yearling doe out there. I'm sorry. You have a yearling doe out there. You could have a 4-point buck, you know. You move in that tree, you're spooking them. You know, they catch your wind, you're spooking them. You know, it's got to take... It takes a lot, you know, to harvest a deer, no matter how big, how old that deer is. You know, it takes a lot of patience, a lot of practice, and you know, like I said,
tree stand time.
And the eye of the beholder, you know, I still do stupid crap every year, every single year. I'll sit there and like, I'll see some deer coming. I'll be like, okay, I'm cool. I can move now, and I'll grab my bow or something like that, and all of a sudden, poof, that big devil will crack.
One's in you.
Yep.
And that little eyes. Twitch of my finger or whatever happened, I'm like, you stupid SOB. Look what you did. You know?
The rate, yeah. You take a look at the rate of failure versus success when you're hunting. If success is coming out of the woods with a harvested deer, the vast majority of hunters fail every single time they go out, myself included. So it's one of those things where a lot of it is preparation, a lot of it is perseverance, a lot of it is putting the time in to hone your skills. Some of it's luck, but if you're willing to put in the time, you'll reap the benefits in the long run.
And there's a lot of luck out there. I've known guys that have spent...
It's all luck.
It's
all luck.
I've known guys that have spent all night at the bar.
We talk about
2:30 in the morning. And not shower, and their scent stinks, and
they
shot the biggest buck out of your whole group of friends all year long. You know, and they give you that story. I was out at O'Neill's till 2 in the morning. Well, I didn't want to get on.
there's smokers that live to be 105, too. So
that's true.
But
yes.
That doesn't mean that's still recommended.
Anomalies.
That's
not anomalies.
No, you can't recommend that stuff, but there's luck involved out there with hunting.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But you see what a trophy 4-point looks like. Get a 12-year-old, 13-year-old that's standing over top of that 4-point. Look in their face. That's a trophy.
Yeah, I have a lot of bucks.
Kids, that's a trophy.
A lot of bucks on my wall, all European mounted. And whenever my boy gets his first deer, it'll be European mounted right next to mine. I don't like full mounts. Never did.
It might be bigger than yours.
Might be.
That's how I like to draw.
Well, you know, and I wish that for him, but all at the same time, I don't wish that for him because I think that might ruin him a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, you see these. This is my first buck.
Agree.
We got an 18-20-inch wide 8-point out there, and this is the kid's first buck.
The bucks in Pennsylvania now are getting a lot bigger than when we grew up.
Yeah.
When we all grew up, you shot. Anything had a horn.
Anything came by. Yep.
Had one horn 3 inches long. It was.
And you were happy with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
You were the pride of camp that day.
Now the bucks are just going crazy.
So we'll throw a gross plug out for ourselves on that note. If you go to our website, paretreport.com, every year at the end of the season, we'll throw pictures of the largest and nicest bucks that we get sent to us. Over the seasons, we just updated 2017, and I think we have probably three times the amount of pictures from 2016, and it kind of doubles or triples or quadruples itself year over year, but then there are a lot of nice bucks on that wall.
And they're all killed in PA.
And they're all PA bucks. So
according to the people who posted them, and their friends who commented on those photos and said, yes, that was killed in Pennsylvania. So
everybody that uses our service is upstanding citizen.
We think that. We hope so.
Oh, yeah.
And we believe that. But there's been some naysayers on the site, of course. But I want to take this opportunity right at the end of our first half here to give Brother Roy and Dr. Bill a little bit of time to explain exactly what they're trying to do here.
Well, let's
explain that, but just kind of give their name.
We got a minute left.
Yeah, I want to get their name out.
We'll come back in.
What their name's going to be, what they're shooting for here, how to get a hold of them, and then we can come back in with them.
Okay.
All right.
Sure.
Bill, you want to take this off or me?
We're going to, we come up with, it's going to be Back 40 Seed Company, and that's going to be the main title of the company, but it's going to be a
premium whitetail forage.
Premium wildlife forage. And
we put our experience in what we've done in Central PA here, and we're going to try to offer the best seed blends out there to grow in this area and give everybody information on what to do, how to start it out, down to soil samples, to even just a clearing brush and making a brand new food plot.
Yeah, we'll be able to walk you right through that. Like we're going to have our website up before too long, and that will also parlay that over onto Brother Roy's page. But
you'll be able to find everything on Brother Roy's page once we get things started, and then we'll have our own page, and
you'll be able to find a lot of this stuff on the Rep.
It should go pretty good. I mean, we got big plans, and
so there you go. Back 40 Seed Company.
Got big plans and big mouths.
Yeah, big mouths.
Back 40 Seed Company.
We can put the word out.
Experience. So, we've had enough screw-ups that we know what not to do.
Yes. So keep an eye out on Brother Roy's Facebook page, which obviously you can find out there through our page, where he does a pretty good job of keeping his stuff up to date.
I don't put as much on as I should be. I'm working at it. I'm
Nobody
all
ever
new
does.
Into this electronic stuff. So.
Nobody judges.
We'll be kicking
judges.
That up a couple notches.
That's
here,
right. So keep an eye out. Back 40 Seed Company. Brother Roy's PA Rut Report.
All right. Thanks for tuning in for this first half. We'll be back at you here for another 25 minutes or so of nonsense.
Not all nonsense.
Thanks.
Just a little bit of
just
good stuff.
Just kidding. Thanks for tuning in, folks. We'll see you in a little bit.
PA Rut Report is your home for Pennsylvania's premier real-time hunting feed. Elevate your awareness with up-to-the-minute updates on rut activity throughout the Commonwealth. Tune in to PA Rut Report podcast for even more updates, tips and tricks, and outdoor tall tales. PA Rut Report is dedicated to the strengthening of the tradition.
All right. We're back.
You never come back in with all right. That's the beginning.
I did it this time. We're back.
This is the first. We are back. We are back.
PA Rut Reports, hunting, fishing, and outdoors. Here with Brother Roy.
Dr. Bill.
Yeah, we're still here. We didn't go anywhere.
Nope.
Dr. Bill, how about the estimated 333,254 deer that were harvested in the state of Pennsylvania this year, according to the Game Commission? 9% increase in
Tough question to answer.
6% increase in overall harvest. It's funny. If you get a chance and you're actually interested in what it is we're talking about right now, go to our Facebook page and see the link we shared from the Game Commission.
You know why?
You get a lot of
you know
mixed,
why the count
mixed
is up?
Opinions.
The count is up because of our seed. We are planning on our food plots.
That's true.
It's remarkable what it's doing. For
you guys, at least
we're
accounted
helping,
for.
We're helping all of Pennsylvania out.
We're seeing
we are.
You at least right you now. At least accounted for 4% of the 6% increase. So yeah, we get a lot of mixed opinions about that. A lot of people that have issue with the processes in place where you register your harvest. People not doing it. The amount of deer harvested that the Game Commission is saying had been harvested, and obviously that 9% uptick in buck harvest, you get a lot of mixed opinions, a lot of people that think those numbers might be a little bit inflated.
A little skewed.
Just a little skewed. But, I mean, you think that would be a tough number to hone down, really, in regards to how people really hunt in Pennsylvania. Because I'd venture a guess and say, I mean, how many hunters are there in Pennsylvania? How many hunters? Million? What's the number? I forget what they said.
less than there used to be.
Definitely less than there used to be, but the numbers are pretty big. And I think it's close to a million, something like that. So an estimated 333,254 deer out of a million hunters is really not that good. And you venture guessing, out of all of the hunters that I know, and I know a decent amount of hunters, I don't know anybody that registers their kill year over year over year.
I try to. Some years I do.
I've had the past couple of years, but before, really, almost, I would say before I got a smartphone, I never did it.
Yep.
Never did it.
So this, yeah, I mean,
I didn't really even, I mean, you get those cards with it and says report your harvest, but, yep. You know, I never did it. But now that there's, you know, it's easier for me, I'll do it. Every time I kill one, I'll do it.
So, no, it's a good thing to do. I mean, more people should register their harvest with the state of Pennsylvania. And I think year over year, hopefully you see more of that again because of the social
we got the snipers coming in there for the season.
Well, that's true. It's culling season.
No, they're not going to snipe them out. I'll tell you what, that's going to get shot down just like it did in Pittsburgh.
You think that?
Yeah. No one's heard. Have you guys? You guys heard?
What's that? Yeah, I heard.
It's starting here soon.
Guess what?
It ain't happening. It's according to Brad.
It's setting up. I think it's between Henrietta and Bedford.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah.
Right they want to do right where the Sugar Shack.
Yeah, our food plots are right in the middle of that.
Right back on this backside mountain.
The CWD, our food plots are right in the middle of it.
We have
zero sick deer on our property. Zero. That we have seen or had pictures of.
I'm over the other property I hunt's over in 2C, and that's where all my trail cameras are. And I've seen thousands of pictures over the years since I started using trail cameras, and I've never had a sick deer.
It's like,
well, you know what? I did have one mangy looking deer, but it was just a shoulder or whatever was messed up. It's like a little bit of his back, and I'm like, yeah, whatever.
So it's like,
and I never saw that deer again. On a trail camera, just kind of like a sluice, over it.
It's almost like seeing Sasquatch kind of in the state of Pennsylvania. Like,
oh, what was that?
Probably.
What is that? Go back.
But no, CWD, I hear a lot of mixed opinions. Obviously, our group of guys sitting right here, if you're familiar with like the 6 degrees from Kevin Bacon, just from the people that we know, or whatever the hell that is, just the people that we know. I know a lot of people that hunt. And for a lot of years, I've known a lot of people that hunt. And I can't remember anybody ever bringing up a deer that they ever experienced that had it.
Now,
some people say it's been, I mean, really, it has been documented. It's been around since the early 70s. And the prevalence or the
number. It's been here, but our deer are getting older now because point restrictions and less hunters. And it's starting to show up in the older deer.
Yeah, yep, that's a good point.
Yeah, there's an incubation period to that chronic wasting deal, and is it 5 years?
I think it's 5 years. It's close to five years.
I'm not sure.
Five-year-old deer, 3 to 5 years old is when they start showing symptoms of it.
I don't know how many deer in the state of Pennsylvania get that old.
Yeah,
they know. I mean, but they're starting to.
They also say that it's more prevalent in bucks than it is does. So maybe that's because you can't get multiple tags for bucks. You know those big older bucks hide a little bit better 3 years on. You know, so they, you know, maybe that's why they're finding that in the older deer and more of them are bucks. I don't know.
We have cameras all over food plots and all over where there are a lot of deer where we hunt them. And we've had truly over the years thousands of pictures where the pictures that we take we have over and over. We really have not seen any sick deer. So, and then this is 365 days a year. We take pictures after the rut, after the season. We want to get pictures of fawns like early. So we do have cameras out like all year round.
Yeah, I mean,
we're really not seeing sick deer. We have fat fawns and fat does, and we really have seen really no sign, not a single one, not one.
Well, with these guys that they're talking about, and I don't think this is going to happen. I mean, I know that you maybe heard recently that it's going to happen again, but I really think it's going to go through with it. If they do, it won't be successful because people will find out where they're putting these corrals, and they're going to go there and sabotage it.
We'll see what happens, but.
I'm telling you right now, it was supposed to happen right back here on my mountain.
It's not going to be long.
It's not going to happen.
Maybe not on your mountain, but it's going to happen here.
Even if they put those fence, this drop things up, it's not happening back here on this mountain.
There's not enough deer in that mountain.
No, they ain't very concerned about that.
There's deer up there. You just got to find them. You just got to find them.
They've been concerned about that mountain for a couple of years.
We can control Mother Nature's almost.
I just think it's really worth it.
The mindset behind it with taking out this certain amount of deer. What if you don't get the deer that are on there? Because you're not testing that. You're not testing the people, the deer you're harvesting.
Yep.
Or killing. I'll just say killing here. You're just killing. You're just shooting everything that comes in there, and then you're not going to get them all.
They're not going to shoot. You know how many deer we have on our property? They're our deer.
Yeah.
They're hanging out on our property. We feed them, and they don't have to go anywhere.
Same thing with that private ground up there. I mean, the owner's not going to let them on there to do stuff like that. And it's thousands of acres of private ground around there. Nobody's going to be on that same page.
No, and it's something that when they started doing it, where did they started doing it in Pittsburgh, right?
Yeah, they tried it at Mount Lebanon, yeah. Pittsburgh, Mount Lebanon, Pittsburgh.
It didn't go very well.
Because of sabotage.
I wouldn't even necessarily say it was because of sabotage. It just didn't go very well.
No, they had sabotage.
Some of it was, definitely. I'm saying not ruling really sabotage out, but.
I lived in Pittsburgh for quite a few years, and in Mount Lebanon, that's one of the suburbs. And in those suburbs, I had folks that I knew that I had seen pictures of absolute ridiculously giant bucks laying in their backyard right beside the gazebo. And I'm thinking, hey, you got to be coming. So I'm asking where they live, but where they live, these deer are in people's yards.
They're like, whatever,
we always said there's yard rabbits. These are yard deer.
They're everywhere, very much so.
And all through that part of Pittsburgh, South Pittsburgh, they're up and down. They are literally on street.
Oh, yeah.
It happens.
Well, I just think there's a better way to go about it than setting up these corrals.
Oh, sure.
You got to get some guys that, maybe have to pass a class to get in there to these certain areas that they want to thin the herd to get a special license to go in there and do it. And guys will gladly go to class.
Oh, yeah.
Especially archery hunters. Be glad to go to a class for maybe a 3-day class and get that certification so you can go into these small areas with your bow or with a slug gun, whatever it may be, and hunt these animals. But there's a better way to do it other than just caging them, shooting them in the cage. And I think that's what the people had a problem with most.
The biggest issue there is if you're looking at what it is that obviously the state needs to do, and that's generate revenue, obviously what they're doing they feel is the most fiscally sound and reasonable for them. If you look at the amount of hunters in the state of Pennsylvania that buy licenses that just surely love to hunt. I mean, you could put myself in that mix. I would hunt any time of the year, all day long, if somebody asked me to. You wouldn't be twisting my leg, especially if it's right outside of hunting season or right before hunting season. But there's so many able-bodied guys in the state of Pennsylvania that would be more than happy to sign on to a system like that or a service like that. And that was one of the big things in Pittsburgh. A lot of these people are looking at the processes they're taking to cull these deer and the amount of money that is being paid to do so. For if you want to really truly make money, just add it as a look at freaking extra farm tag kind of thing.
Pretty much.
Exactly. You could go as far as doing it
if you don't want it every day of the week, doing it on designated days. Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Oh, yeah. You can hunt these animals. Go do it.
I just don't want to see the animals wasted. That's what.
No, yeah. You look at the other.
Well, they're shooting them for CWD. All right.
Going back to the number of deer that we say, I mean, all of us are hunters. How many have you seen that have been afflicted by this? And the number is zero. I mean, all of those deer, if you look at programs like, Hunters Helping the Harvest or something like that, there's a couple programs in Pennsylvania where you basically donate your kill and they'll give it to food banks and stuff like that. Hunters Helping the Harvest, I think is what it is. But the amount of programs that there are around and really how good venison is. Venison is great meat to eat. Healthy, tastes good. I mean, preparation is not
nice
anything
organic
difficult. Storing, yeah.
especially if they're on the back 40 food plots.
That's right. It's been eating those seeds. Yeah.
That's the good food. Makes them taste good.
But yeah, no, they could definitely find a better way. They could definitely find a better way to do it that would benefit the whole rather than just expediency.
There was an article, trash. And there was two cases that were found, and the headline ran Fulton County, and I'm forgetting the other county, but there was two.
We're right in the middle of it.
But they found two deer, and that was the big headline. And then as soon as you start reading the article, they were both deer behind fences. They were in enclosures. So they found both of these enclosures, and then they were talking about what they got to do with all the deer that are inside. And they're talking about, like, you know, you can, what they're called, euthanizing the entire herd.
Yep.
Or, yeah, there's a certain waiting period, how that goes. It's kind of nuts, but they're finding these deer, but those are the deer that's how they get that. They're eating out of a trough.
Right.
And these guys are walking up, and there's a big difference between feeding the deer in a trough and having
planting fields for them.
Yes. What we're doing is they're eating. They have whatever they want.
They're not. Yeah, they're not side by side. They're not. There's no cross contamination of anything in that.
Yeah, that's not how they're meant to eat. We have deer walking through the same areas, eating the same plants, but we don't. There's so much out there for them.
Right.
They're browsers as opposed to being a grazer.
Right.
And those browsers need to have different food. Half hour in one of our fields, and then they're in the woods. They're browsing. They're eating.
Yep. Well, that's the thing. Whenever there's a good acorn. Whenever there's a good acorn drop, you guys don't get that many deer in your fields.
No, we get very little. Very little.
They'll walk right through a clover field. They'll walk right through the alfalfa. Oh,
yeah.
And they're heading straight to the white oaks.
They won't even, if there's white oaks in the area.
They want the acorns at that time of year. We try to supply food for them when there's not that much out there.
Yep.
But it's scattered all over, and the deer are all over the entire countryside, and that's what they're eating.
Yep.
They're browsing like they're supposed to, as opposed to these deer. A lot of these that are getting sick, but they are around other deer. Their muzzles are sitting right next to one another. Yep.
Look at these big bucks that are being killed in PA. They're not food plot raised deer. They're mountain bucks. They're out in the woods.
Yes.
They don't have no food plots, no fields, no nothing. And they are giants.
Giant deer.
Giants.
Love giant deer.
We love the giants.
Trevor, it's all about the experience.
We touched on that, but we love the giants.
Just talking about giant deer and food plots and such, and, you know, your own property and what how much time you put in there. So you're sitting there, you know, you're collecting, you have four to six trail cameras out on your property, you know, and you go collect all the cars, you're excited when you get home, and, you know, 3 weeks in a row, it's like, duh, 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 spike, duh, 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 and just repetitious for 3 weeks in a row. Then all of a sudden,
it's like, bam.
You're going through one car, and you got 300 pictures, and then 165, you're just clicking, clicking, click, 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 whoa, 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 go back, and then you see this rack buck coming in there. And that's, you know, tell you what, that's like, that's the awesome,
they should
I'll just
show
say
up
the awesomeness
the
about trail cameras is it's great to see that.
I'll tell you, a huge
buck come into your property and you're like, holy shit, there he is. I knew he was here. He's got to be in here.
Oh, yeah.
And you don't see him all season.
Yep.
Well, yeah, that's what he is.
But. Well, I'll tell you, going back to one of the things we were talking about earlier, and that is getting youth involved in the outdoors and just excited about it. Property that I hunt, we usually have two or three trail cams out a year. But in the areas where you have them, it's high traffic for a little bit of everything. So you're seeing turkey and raccoon and fox and bobcats and, I mean, a little bit of everything in the Pennsylvania woods. And I sit down with my two sons. I'll sit down with them and I'll go through those pictures and you point out the animals that you're seeing. You have them start to identify what it is that they're seeing. It's a good little trick to get them kind of active and acclimated to it. Because you see a lot of different stuff on trail cameras.
And truly, it's the same way whenever you're in the stand and, you know, there is so much more than to just wait and to just be looking for a whitetail. There is constant activity in the Pennsylvania woods. It's awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't get enough of it. I truly
can't. Oh, yeah.
I
tell you, it's much of a love-hate relationship that I have with squirrels. At the same point in time, I mean, it's so annoying with them, but at the same point in time, they give you that little adrenaline perk where you hear that ch-ch-ch-ch-ch.
Some of those I call imposters because I know the difference between a squirrel and once in a while they do get me.
They don't, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You are so good at that.
I'll tell you, one of the cool things that I really enjoy seeing year after year after year, and I have a lot of turkeys on our property we hunt, so it's great for me, but get up in a tree, sitting there, and about a half hour before it gets dark out, like right when you think it's going to get good, and you have all these turkeys come down into you, and you see 25 of them go up on the roost, and it's really cool, really loud,
very, very loud.
Oh, yeah.
But very cool. But very cool all at the same time, man. Very cool all at the same time. It's one of my favorite things, actually, to see in the woods. And it would be cool to have a video camera on that at some point. But usually I'm just like, oh, it's happening. But it's prime time, so I have my bow in my hand, so.
I have a beef with them turkeys. They piss me off sometimes.
I know you don't like the turkeys.
Yeah, one of we'll say one of my fondest hunting memories.
Just talking about moments in the woods.
Stories that I share. This was 5 or 6 years ago. I'm up in a tree stand in archery season, asleep, because I have a tendency to fall asleep sometimes.
Tell the big buck story again.
This is different. Come on. Shame on you. So, you know, not off in a tree stand, and I'm in a split tree where the other tree's probably, I don't know, 3 yards away from my face. And I'm sleeping. I come to, and I open my eyes, and there's a squirrel on that opposite side of the split tree staring at me. And I sit up, and I look at it, and it went, like, let out one of those big squirrel screams. And I think I let out a little bit of a scream myself. I was like, ah! But that was one of the, it's interesting what level of interaction you get with a lot of different creatures in the outdoors when you're out in the woods.
Creatures.
And another, I think I talked about this in one of our tree stand safety episodes when I folded the seat out of that one stand and there was a chipmunk in there. I almost fell out of the tree stand there. Always be ready. This little tree varmint will show up all over the place. I saw one thing this year in the woods that I haven't seen for a while. And it was a red hawk just coming down through the
red
trees.
Hawk or a red-tailed hawk?
Red-tailed hawk coming down through the trees.
Short for red-tailed hawk.
Come on.
Red hawk.
I want them red hawks.
I've heard of red hawks.
Oh, bald eagles. Bald eagles, too. I saw 3 bald eagles this year.
Ain't got time for tail.
We'll say this past year in areas where I've never seen them before. So they're kind of seem like they're making
What's one of the great things that you see in the woods is a hawk plowing a squirrel. Is there anything better?
Oh, just watching them fly through the trees at that speed. It's like, man, it's pretty impressive. But yeah, a lot of stuff in the woods. A lot of stuff you can see.
Mushrooms.
Yeah, pecking,
stuff you can find.
Trout.
A lot of stuff you can find.
Turkeys.
Yep.
Deer.
Bear.
Ticks.
Ticks. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
Elk kind of leads.
Elk for some lucky people. This year is going to be phenomenally bad.
It is going to be bad. Everybody put the permethrin on.
Yep.
Oh, no. Permethrin. Permethrin.
What's that? Sawyer. The other one's Sawyer.
Sawyer is permethrin. Yeah. It's just the name brand. Yeah.
Sorry. Prepare for ticks. They're going to be bad.
Yeah.
Watch the ticks.
I'm out there every day in the woods, and they are bad right now.
So
be ready.
From a point of naivety here, going back to the food plot stuff that we're talking about, so talk about switching up crops. So I know the area where I hunt, they plant corn, they plant clover, they plant radish, they plant. Now this is a farmland. It's not so much control.
Control. Then they're planting for agricultural.
Yeah. But you talk about nutrient depletion and the reason why they switch
fields.
Plants.
We switch every year. And
we switch, but we test every field
before
we plant. That's we test every field.
A must.
Yep.
Testing. You got to test the soil. Otherwise, you're wasting money.
First thing we always look for, we tell everybody who talks about if they're early food plotters, do soil tests. That's the first thing. And the first thing, the most important thing out of the soil test really is not the fertilizer as much as it is the pH.
It's a real easy thing to do.
Adding lime is the most important.
That's the key.
That's the most important piece, really. The fertilizer doesn't do much good. The plants, if the pH is not neutral, which we're going to say is around a 7, 6.5 to 7.
6.5 to 7, yeah. That's in that range.
For most plants that any food plotter would plant, it's roughly in that range. And for the plants to be able to take in all of the fertilizer that you put into the ground, the pH has to be correct. Otherwise, really, what you're doing is you can put a lot of fertilizer into the ground, and the plants can't take in all those nutrients that they need. So you're really wasting money on fertilizer just to throw fertilizer out.
The plants won't take up the fertilizer.
Right.
If there's a lot of different custom fertilizers, Roy kind of hit the jackpot. I mean, like the fertilizer jackpot, but we get in bigger bulk, but, a lot of times whenever you're looking at your soil samples, There's a lot of different things that you may or may not need. There's those three numbers in nitrogen, the phosphorus, and the potassium. Those three numbers right there, that's what you see in that order. And there's different things that you might need to add to your field, be it one or the other, but some in different degrees. So
quantity, you can, tonnage.
Well, poundage, but we use tonnage, but it's, that soil sample tells all that.
Yep.
You
know, yep.
So it's really important stuff. Before you even put seed
in. You do your soil sample and you tell them what you're going to plant in that soil, and they tell you, say, hey, you need to put 2,000 pounds of lime bound per acre, or, and say, 300 pounds at triple 10 or 150 pounds at triple 19. It's,
you guys are talking
soil sample. The soil samples is the key to making your
these things are all so fun to do. Food plotting is a very fun thing. I love it.
Well, let's do it basic with cheap equipment. Yeah.
You let's love say, it. Let's don't say, waste money.
Yeah.
Let's know, say, know your stuff.
We use all old junk antique farm equipment, and it works for us.
Well, let's say this stuff for you guys. So for a lot of people that are listening to this, this is probably sounding like a foreign language, what it is that you guys are talking about. So drawing
triple seven.
So we'll say drawing a hypothetical, and this is questions to you guys, drawing a hypothetical based off of what you think would be the average person's ability to plan a food plot, where they would be planning and what they'd be planning, and the just the step-by-step process you're going through, because Bill, Dr. Bill was saying earlier, there really is a process that you must follow in order to get the best yield at the end. If you are somebody who's interested in doing it but doesn't know a lot about it and wants to start doing it right now, what processes are you guys going through? Spring plotting, the stuff that you'd go through if you were drawing a, this is a average experience for somebody who has not done it before.
It all depends on the area you want to plant. Are you doing pre-existing fields? Meadows, grass, you know, flatlands. Are you putting in a brand new plot on nothing but blackberries and bushes and like a power line or something, or an old logging road where you're going in and clear brush? We've done that. We go in and we clear brush. We burn the brush, pull stumps with the tractor. We test the soil. We apply the lime, fertilizer necessary for what we're planting. And you got to plant something. Are you in a drought area where it's going to be dry soil or wet soil? You get the shady north, like the north northeast slopes, east slopes, they hold moisture longer than your southern slopes. So it all depends on what you want to plant.
Yep.
For like,
now that's probably the first thing, is to decide what you want to plant, but truly assess,
you can manage.
You do want to try to split that up, even if it's a small piece. You want to try to have food 365 days a year. So that's kind of the idea, really. And you want to try to mix it up as best you can. I mean, as far as the layout of your property goes, that's a really key piece, where there's property that's flat and faces the sun versus something that's going to be back at like a logging road. So you really have to decide, number one, what you're going to plant. The seed bed preparation, that's kind of another thing, because all these seeds have to go in at a certain time.
Uh-huh.
If you're going to be a food plotter and you want to kind of do it, and you want to do it the right way, do it the right way once. And you have to, a lot of this seed bed preparation takes weeks.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, to initially kill all the weeds that are there.
Weeds,
you want to cut
them.
So,
thing, yeah.
So let's say I'm listening to this podcast when it comes out here in a couple of days, and I want to do something right now.
Right now.
You're listening to Brother Roy and Dr. Bill has inspired me to go outside and do something right now.
Plant something.
What am I planting?
I plant clover.
I plant right now. Cloves.
Clover. Yes, definitely.
Yeah. Okay, it's there all year round. We come up with some really nice plants. Clover that really grows really well around here, and
limited sun. It can tolerate a lot of sun or a lot of shade.
Uh-huh.
A lot of the clover, and our clover is doing phenomenal. It took us 5 years to figure out what the plant clover was.
Uh-huh.
We've tried all different kinds of seeds, and it took us 5 years to figure out what grows here in central Pennsylvania.
Yep. So that here's another question for say the novices. What is your rate of failure? What do you think?
You know,
46.
Our rate of failure is a lot higher then
because you guys are trying a lot
really,
of other stuff.
Then really yeah. need to be. Okay. I mean, because I think we try a lot of different things, but really the sequence of events really is to decide what you want to plant in a field. If it's a field, and that's what a lot of folks, if they have mm-hmm. a field, yep. you're going to have to cut it and you're going to have to kill the weeds. So you know that there's going to be competition for the weeds there, and weed control is a big thing. So really, if you say you want to do something right now,
weeds.
Cut it and start killing weeds.
Yep.
There are Roundup type products where you kill everything that's in the field. You know, it's just dropping a bomb on the field. So it's just brown. And then whatever kind of equipment you have, whether it's a four wheeler or a rake or you have a tractor with a disc, you got to break up the soil. So you need to prepare a seed bed the same as you would you're going to plant your tomatoes.
Okay. Sure.
So killing those weeds, what we do, there's ways of mechanically killing those weeds. We do that with the disc, and then you spray it. Those sprays, they're available everywhere.
Get them at your local Tractor Supply. Anywhere.
Now, when you guys start doing the Back 40 business, are you going to be providing anything like that? Sprays, anything outside of the general?
In the near future, we may.
Uh-huh.
We're going to walk before we run.
I think that's a whole different category. Sending
it is,
no,
it is,
out there.
It is a whole different
getting
category.
Getting into herbicides is a whole other category right now. I mean, the basic thing is go out there, get your brush cleared out, get the ground tore up, kill the weeds.
And really, you're looking at a nice big field full of dirt.
Like a couple easy steps and
you're done.
It's not that hard. You're going to fail. You're going to fail. There's failures out there. We've done it lots of times.
It's like any kind of gardening. Gardening's hit and miss.
Yeah, the time you put in is
you betcha.
What you're going to get out.
They're all hit and miss, to be sure.
But now, here in the near future, check us out. I'm going to post everything on the Brother Roy page. We'll have our own page up and running in the next month or so. It's going to be the Back 40 Seed Company, Premium Whitetail Forage, or Wildlife Forage, not Whitetail, but we're going to specify them Whitetails too.
All right, so if you guys are tuning into this and you guys enjoyed this episode, I want to tell you that I thank Dr. Bill and Brother Roy for coming here tonight and giving their information, and I hope you guys use them because they're very knowledgeable and they learn from their mistakes. Check those guys out. But I want to touch base on, we haven't done a podcast in a while, so this is going to be out in the next couple of days from today, which is...
hopefully. Don't date it.
Today is, but... Yeah. Anyway, it'll be on the next couple of days, but hope you guys tune in. We're going to be keying in on the podcast for the youth on the 8th for April, and then the April 15th opener, and then again on the April 22nd youth turkey, and then we'll have the real turkey opener on the 29th for the statewide turkey opener. So
you are tying us into a lot of dates here in the future.
I wanted to do that. So we're gonna do some stuff. They might be in two episodes or four. We don't
force
know.
Them. Force them in
but
hands
we'll get there.
So. Oh yeah, no, yeah, definitely pay attention.
Keep tuning in. It's the season, and we're gonna be back at you.
Yes, and if you're bored, we'll say this: if you're bored, you know it's a downtime right now. It's coming into spring, it'll be good. But if you're bored, we have 24 other episodes that you can access and listen to on our website, PARepreport.com. That's the easiest way to get to our feeds.
Or Podomatic.
But yeah, check those out. More things to come here over the next however long you want to.
Yeah, it's the season. We'll be back. We're going to be back at you.
We're out of hibernation.
Don't forget about us out there.
Yeah. All right. Thank you. So next episode will be soon.
Sounds good to me.
All right. Dr. Bill, Brother Roy.
Hey, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Awesome.
A lot of fun.
All right. Till next time.